Hello and welcome to this week's Mad Tech Podcast. You have me, your host, Lindsay Roundtree. I am head of content at ExchangeWire. And I'm joined by our CEO, Kieran O'Kane. Hello, Kieran.
Hello, Lindsay.
And our guest today is Rob Webster, who is founder of Canton Marketing Solutions. Hello, Rob.
Hello, Lindsay.
And we are back from our Around the World Tour, or Rachel Smith's APAC World Tour.
World Tour.
Yeah. So after some episodes coming out of Australia and Singapore, we're now back in London.
Yay.
Yay. And you had the delightful Kieran back in your ear again.
Yeah.
So the three news stories this week, let's kick off with Facebook. I mean, just in general, really. I'd love to spend a week where we're not talking about Facebook, but they always give us so much ammunition. Their results came out yesterday, and despite views to the contrary, they absolutely smashed it, as many expected they would do. They posted fourth quarter results of $6.88 billion, up from $4.27 billion the previous year. This comes in spite of continued scandal from the company. A couple of examples here are where they have been accused of paying 13 to 35-year-olds, although a lot of the news says paying teenagers. Of course, it's not just teenagers, to basically mine their device data via an app where they're basically getting paid to take screenshots of things they've done and kind of basically be able to jailbreak their phone so they can see everything that they're doing. And it's against things like Apple's user policy and everything else, and they're getting a lot of trouble for that. They've also got in trouble for creating political discord in many countries like Brazil and India. So they've now had to limit within WhatsApp, limit the amount of forwarding they can do. So I could only forward a message to five different people to stop me kind of starting a war, basically. But within that, they also announced, well, Zuckerberg's announced he wants to integrate the technology, the infrastructure behind WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger and Instagram. Lots of stories around that. I mean, let's kick off with their earnings. Was it a surprise?
No.
No.
No. I have slagged off Facebook, but I'm only slagging off from a social point of view. But after my sort of hiatus off Twitter and my sort of chilling out over the January, I've begun to realise that Facebook, you know, if you've anything too much of a good thing is a bad thing, right? And likewise social media. So, you know, it's up to this. It's personal responsibility. You take personal responsibility for how much time you spend on Instagram and Facebook, all the rest of it, right? I can't blame the company. The company obviously has a role in addicting people using various techniques, but that's aside, right? The furore over Facebook now, to me, seems to be in the sort of echo chamber of the media echo chamber, right? There is lots of hand-wringing going on between the top brands, right? But the thing I think most media pundits seem to forget, and even analysts in Wall Street seem to forget, is that Facebook is very much a platform of choice for direct-to-consumer companies, right? Direct-to-consumer brands, digital-first brands. And even now, smaller companies who have abandoned the likes of local press for the kind of granular targeting that is just isn't available anywhere else. And these numbers testify that. And across their platforms, I think they're up 9%. They've got 2.23 billion active users a month across all their platforms. And as you said, Lindsay, they did 6.8 billion in profit this quarter. And they did 16.6 billion in revenue, up 30%. And then year on year, 55 billion for 2018, up 38%. Look, there is no doubt that Facebook's problems are an issue, right? But I think they're going to start to deal with them. It's like any kind of grown-up company. They're kind of teenage pains, right? And they've had to do a lot of things. And there's been lots of scandals, if you put that in inverted commas. But a lot of it's been sort of blown out of proportion by the media. Now, what I would say about them is, from a direct-to-consumer company focus, which, you know, obviously we've just launched our own DTC Daily, which is going to focus on that, the Facebook platforms are extraordinary for the ability to scale a company and to reach, like, valuable audiences. Instagram, as you well know, is basically the DTC platform of choice for marketing. Now, what can they do around that? It's not just advertising they can do. They can do, you know, commerce, right? If they put a one-click to buy solution in there, it opens up a whole new opportunity for them in terms of revenue. Look at WhatsApp, right? I think 200 million people in India are using that that particular app. They're going to build a payment system into India to make it easy to pay for goods, become effectively what WeChat is in terms of payment in China. So they're in a really strong position, and their stock price has been taking a hammering over the last couple of years. Over the last 12 months, mainly because of these scandals. And I've seen some reports from Brian Reason. I don't believe them. I mean, I'm starting to to know what Facebook is. It's not going anywhere. They're not going to suddenly fall apart. People use these apps religiously, day on day, right? If you're not using Instagram, you're using WhatsApp. If you're not using Facebook Messenger, you're using Instagram. They have such a stronghold on the mobile app usage. They're not going to... This for me is a confirmation that they're just going to go get stronger.
I think a lot of this is we think we're talking about Facebook as a platform. We're actually talking about Facebook's suite of products, of which there are plenty.
Yes.
And actually Facebook are working out that if their Facebook social media platform is not growing the same way that it used to, it's still massive. They've reached saturation and they're starting to lose users, and their demographic is becoming older. They're actually able to kind of diversify their offering both from a user perspective and a media perspective. I mean, Rob, do you think that the Facebook have actually got it right and everything has been being blown out of proportion?
I think a lot of it's been blown out of proportion. I echo what Kieran said, that they're kind of the go-to attack boys for the newspapers these days. Yeah, if you're short of a story or two, let's go and blame Facebook for everything. That's not to say they're not doing anything wrong at all. They shouldn't be more careful about how their platform's used. But overall, I think they've just become sort of the whipping boys in that respect. You've got to remember that, you know, if people say they don't like Facebook, people do love Instagram. And brands love Instagram for all those reasons. But also, it's such a visual platform, which everyone likes. So if Facebook itself were to decline slightly, you know, you think Instagram's got a long way to grow. It's also amazingly easy to spend money. You know, you can be a tiny little mom-and-pop shop with £20 on your credit card and get some decent localized advertising done. Or you can spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds on it and still get your returns. They still offer a post-click model, which in a world where last click still rules is pretty effective. And they generally just make it very, very easy for you to spend money. That's why most brands have a Facebook strategy, even if that strategy is not to use Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kieran, you mentioned...
My sister.
E-commerce, your sister, is right.
She doesn't spend money on newspapers or radio, and she spends money on Facebook. And the amazing footfall she's getting off the back of that is a testament to the advertising. Look, they've built an amazing platform, right? It's going to be very hard. Like, the press obviously have a commercial end as well, right? Facebook are kind of bleeding a lot of money from traditional newspapers, local press, because it's just easier to advertise. Rob says, it's a piece of piss. It's so easy to spend money and keep spending money. And you can see the performance there. I mean, there's been talk. I've seen a few analysts writing about, oh, performance advertisers are not happy. I don't believe that. I think that there's an incentive for analysts and others to write negative stuff about Facebook because it sometimes moves the share price. They have their own objectives, but the numbers are clear. They continue to get spend from their core advertisers, and who gives a shit if P&G and Unilever decide to cut their spend? Unilever and P&G are a smattering of spend for Facebook. 10% of that revenue last year came from Chinese game makers, for Christ's sake, right? You know, I just don't see. They obviously still need the big brands. Don't get me wrong, to pay for their canteen and all the rest of it. Like,
another comment on the canteens.
Yeah, their canteens are pretty good, in fairness.
But I'm interested. You mentioned e-commerce. Do you both think that e-commerce will be their next route of entry?
Yes,
I would have thought so. I think they've been doing it for years. You know, that social buying angle that they haven't really exploited. But arguably, they're doing well enough right now, they don't have to.
Well, exactly. They're still growing. Do they need to try and go down the arguably very complex e-commerce route?
I think it's a missed opportunity.
Okay.
Agreed.
I'm just talking from... I'm looking at my sister's perspective here, right? She wants to build a website to sell stuff, right? Why doesn't Facebook build a tool for these mom-and-top shops to say one-click, drop shipping, all the rest, take a percentage of it, and actually probably start generating sales off the back of that straight away? Because a lot of these small businesses, right, are going to spend between 10 and 15 grand to build out a website on Shopify and the front end and all the rest of it. It's a pain in the arse for a lot of these companies. It really is. And if you get the wrong development team, they could mess up the project and then you could be out of fortune. Whereas Facebook said, look, if you want to sell this product online, here's a plug-and-play option. You work out the drop shipping, so there's another plug-in. I think that they would be foolish not to build a system, particularly in a world where Amazon is building private labels to compete against the brands selling on Amazon, you know?
At the very least, we could see Facebook Pay.
Yes.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I think they should buy Stripe Pay. You know that? Mm. That would be really interesting. There's two companies I think they should buy, right? One is Roku, one is Stripe. I think the Roku thing would solve their video problem, their TV problem, because that's probably one of the weakest spots, right? Because they've tried to launch Watch and IGTV, and it's been a fucking disaster, right? Well, not a disaster, but in Facebook terms,
it's not been very successful at all. No.
So buying Roku would immediately get them into the front room and have that wedge then between, you know, that is a very interesting spot. And buying Stripe then, you know, that'd be interesting. Plug that in, and they could build the e-commerce platform internally. They don't need to buy anybody for that crack, because they've got, you know,
and they've got a lot of cash in the bank.
Exactly.
Right?
I'm not a fan of the social platform myself. I don't use Facebook. I don't use Instagram, but I use WhatsApp, right? Because most of the population in Europe, in Ireland, are on WhatsApp. So if you take yourself off WhatsApp, you're kind of hiving yourself away from friends, family, etc., you know?
I got a text from my mother the other day. She's just got a new iPhone, and she's terrified that Facebook are going to merge her account and force her onto Facebook so people can contact her.
Well, I think that's a problem.
It's a fair point, though. I mean, it's a fair concern to have, because we don't really know how that's going to look.
I think that's a big mistake.
Yeah.
I think that's one. I think Zuckerberg's more worried about the company getting broken up. That's his only motivation to integrating all three platforms is stop Facebook getting broken up, right?
Yeah. So like, it's a shared data offering, which exactly. He says will be fully encrypted.
I do not. I'll just tell Facebook that you will lose a lot of users off WhatsApp if you start trying to get people onto your shitty Facebook app. Yeah. Nobody wants it, particularly my age group, particularly my friends. Do not want to be in Facebook.
Which is why I'm sure they won't, right? I'm sure they're going to unify the ID so that it's just one ID that you use across both.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to be very, very careful not to do that for exactly that reason.
I don't think they'll be allowed to. Yeah. The Irish Privacy Office, I don't know what their full title is, but they're in charge of overseeing the privacy. Any company that's based, headquartered in Ireland or any country, the privacy body looks after like the privacy of the company in Europe, but they've already said they're not happy with this and they're going to block it. So I don't think they're going to get their way in that regard. Instagram and Facebook, they could probably integrate that. But WhatsApp, it's only a phone number. There's no email address or identity.
No, there's not. There's no real profile. The profile is very, very basic. I think the bigger thing around WhatsApp will be integrating WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger, because Facebook Messenger has become a bit of a standalone success for them outside of the Facebook platform, where you can still use Messenger without having a Facebook profile, a Facebook account. It's probably more around how they can merge those two together.
Well, yeah,
I want them to.
I'm convinced it's just going to be basically a mapping table, right? They're going to map your Facebook ID to your WhatsApp ID, so that you only need to have one account to do either.
Yeah.
So if you have three accounts, they'll just merge it into one. Whereas if we, like, I don't know the situation, I don't have a Facebook or Instagram account, but I have a WhatsApp number. So I'd just be a standalone ID in WhatsApp, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess from within the shared, it'd be unified logon, right? Shared platform, and you can then choose to activate an Instagram account, activate a Facebook profile.
It also means by definition that if you use WhatsApp and you use Facebook, then Facebook knows your phone number.
Yeah, which is...
Good point.
I just think there's going to be... if he integrates all three, but they'll be certainly checked on matching specific data without the say-so of the user. So if the user has not opted in, they won't be allowed to do that. I'm pretty sure this is against the GDPR regulations.
It feels like too much of a minefield that they could just easily screw up on this.
So I don't know. I think it's going to look much more like Google single sign-on. Google did single sign-on back in, 2006? 2008 maybe, and everyone moaned at the time, but it ended up working pretty nicely.
It has worked nicely, and you just choose to activate what you want to activate within their entire suite of products.
Exactly.
So if they can make that work, it makes a lot of sense for them to combine everything together. It does make sense.
I do think that they need, like, I'm not going to tell how Facebook to run the business, because clearly they're doing a fucking better job than you know, having me tell them what to do.
But
that they need to think about the products in their own particular universe, right? WhatsApp is not an environment for ads. It never will be, right? And what they should be thinking about is the way they're thinking about India is a payment system, right? See it as an ecosystem to plug in various things, like, you know, I want to give you like the way you pay someone in Monzo, right? If you've got a Monzo account, you give them 100 quid straight into the account. Something similar like that in WhatsApp, and particularly in countries
like a Line WeChat style approach.
Particularly in countries like India, where they're actually trying to curb the use of currency, coins, right? This is going to be a very handy tool to do that. And the rumor on the one of the rumor there was a rumor saying that they were going to build their own sort of Bitcoin-esque thing, but a stable coin that's pegged to a specific currency as a means to pay. So it means it's not just digital currency. You can just back it into the dollar or back it into the rupee or whatever currency it is. So it can sort of pan out as a proper
interesting
transaction. But they, look, I think that their share price is still very low. If you compare that to what Google and Facebook or Google and Amazon's are, I think it's very low. And look, these numbers suggest to us that they're not really being affected by these scandals at all.
No, and we must move on. But this is related
to Facebook.
Yeah, this is related to
Facebook
and Google.
We're just doing a Facebook podcast.
So we're talking about the future of news publishing is struggling. And when I say future, we're looking at the kind of the digital first, digitally native publishers that were supposed to represent how journalism and how publishing is going to change and kind of be redefined. And I'm talking about the likes of BuzzFeed, the likes of Huffington Post, owned by Verizon, of course, Vox Media, that have all really struggled of late. And there's been a lot of layoffs there. There's been a lot of questions around how they can continue to diversify, looking at new revenue streams. They've all had to let a lot of people go. I mean, what's going on? We thought this would be the answer to publishing.
I think that in a way, some of the publishers are taking a spoon to a knife fight when it comes to digital media and ad tech. You've kind of got a world where 60% now of all media is spent on Google, Facebook, and Amazon. And that has to take money away from the rest of the publishers. And I don't think they've done it historically a good enough job on collaborating and saying that we're going to work together to help protect premium content and protect premium journalism. There's a small company in the UK, Resonance, who I really like their mission statement. They want to go out there and try and help publishers.
Rarely, yeah.
Yeah. And I'd love to kind of see more of that go on. I'd love to see Ozone really kick off and deliver the promise that these cooperatives have always had, but so far have kind of under-delivered.
Yeah. And this is the interesting thing. So Jonah Peretti, who's the founder and CEO of BuzzFeed, has come out and said that, you know, this is not what we want to happen, but we need to make sure that we are tooling ourselves up for what the future of our business will be. And we don't see growth in these areas, which is why we've laid people off. Verizon have come out with a similar reason as to why they've laid off people as well, because what the kind of the core future of their business looks like and the roles they've let go in the journalism side of things don't fit into that. But what Jonah Peretti has said is that if five or six of the top digital media publishing businesses got together and collaborated and we weren't just kind of a one horse race and kind of one channel trying to get to the advertiser without having to use the likes of Google and Facebook, we'd have done a lot better than we are doing now. And that begs that you know is a ringing endorsement for the likes of the Ozone project and any other digital co-op happening in other European countries, surely.
Sure, I can't talk to what's happening on the current Ozone project because I'm unaware, but the rumours of the previous ones were that they looked great and shiny on the outside, but on the inside there was a lot of ego and a lot of infighting.
It was too much ego. It was too much ego, and it turned into a bit more of an ad network than it did than a consortium, and it was... But they all know that, and the ones that have come into the Ozone project, from what I've been told, have come in with... It feels like a much more level playing field. They've all come in knowing they've all got to have skin in the game, and they can't bring their egos into play anymore. Because otherwise, if they do, they're going
to
die.
Which would be great. Right? I mean, you know, I'm speaking from a guy who's trying to go out there and help brands spend money online. I'm incredibly confident that if these Ozone and similar projects can really show value, that brands will get behind them. But they need to make it easy for you. We're speaking about Facebook and Google. They make it easy to spend money. We need to make it really, really easy for brands that care about these publications to spend money with them. And right now, they don't make it easy, in my view.
No, interesting. And what about outside of the kind of the revenue from advertising? What about the diversification in general? So BuzzFeed's a great example of this.
So, look, you could like let's push this out first. BuzzFeed's not losing money; they're actually making money. Their revenue is increasing, right? They're just not increasing to the at the rate that their VCs expect. So now they're trying to do cut staff, cut costs, because it's the first way, the easiest way to cut costs within a company. And they are growing, right? The problem with a lot of these companies is that they took on too much VC, right? And there was a great piece, I don't know, I highly recommend our readers our listeners, sorry, not our readers, our readers and our listeners, to subscribe to Satatory. It's an email newsletter written by I can't remember the gentleman's name, based in Taiwan, but he writes these very long in depth, and he charges 120. It's quite an interesting model. He charges 120.
Can you spell that? I'll say that word again.
Strattachery. Strattachery. We'll put it on the site.
Yeah.
He basically writes one long newsletter every day, and it's 120 quid for the year, and he's got tens of thousands of subscribers. Actually, quite a really interesting model if you're talking about models that succeed. And he wrote about the news ecosystem, and he's basically said that Facebook has completely destroyed that model of sort of like, you know, the closed ecosystems that the newspapers had before, and to a certain extent what BuzzFeed were trying to do in the first instance has been sort of disseminated by the growth of Facebook, because it's the biggest publisher in the world. You could argue that Facebook is the biggest publisher in the world in terms of like aggregating content and people putting their own content there. So there's no, you can't compete with that, right? I mean, there is a point to Rob, and I would subscribe to this, that there is a place for premium contextual publishers, and until that ecosystem gets, our ecosystem gets a single ID, our means for us to compete against those two companies, it's going to be hard to get more money in there. But I think...
Can I challenge that? I don't think it needs a single ID. I think the word ID has all those negative connotations. What it needs is a simple way to A, buy it and B, measure against it and be sure that it's working. It doesn't need to be about an individual user.
I agree, but is there enough money to support these publishers? If you think about just Facebook, Google, right? We're talking about the sort of like the time that people spend on certain things. Like, so like we're talking about Fortnite, we're talking about the other platforms like TikTok. There's a whole and Snapchat, there's a whole bunch of these guys who are sucking up spend. And inevitably that money is going to come from the publishers, right? Whether it's the premium publishers or the mid to long tail publishers, right? All, and as Rob said, it's very easy to spend through Google and Facebook, right? And the other platforms. So these publishers need to start looking at other models, right? And BuzzFeed have done a great job, in fairness to spinning out their own products, right? I think they're selling kitchen utensils off the back of Tasty, right?
And they're now saying that in Walmart, not just online, yeah, as well.
I think genuinely it sounds like the publisher business needs to be much more diversified. I was actually thinking this on the way home, on the way in here today, thinking about my own local newspaper in Ireland, right, the Northern Standard, right. It's a traditional newspaper owned by a bigger group. It's basically downsized quite a lot of its journalists and all the rest of it. But I started thinking about what does local media, who are struggling to get spend, and I remember Rob, you probably noticed yourself, a lot of brand advertisers, particularly video advertisers, don't want to spend the news because there's a lot of stories about murders and, you know, car crashes and all the rest of it. They don't want to be against that, so they're disadvantaged that way, right? But what they have, and publishers need to think about their business and what it means to their what a local news company like the Northern Standard had is local roots, right? Can they build a business around the event stuff? Like, why can't they use the newspaper or the website as a means to build other businesses around that, right? So if I look at BuzzFeed, right, good example as well, using Tasty, using the audience to sell goods, right? It's almost like DTC brands want to build content marketing, right? They spend an awful lot of money. A lot of these publishers already have it nailed. Well, it wouldn't take an awful lot to figure out what their audience is, like a fishing site, and start selling fishing goods on the site to users, right? I know it sounds glib to say, but now seems to be the time to do this. The cost of actually distribution and selling is decreasing.
What if you had publishers behaving more like Facebook do? So what Facebook do is they keep you within their ecosystem. So you're always logged in, and they know the data about you that becomes valuable.
Yeah.
If publishers could do that, then they could have an awful lot more success monetizing you on or off site.
Universal login.
Indeed, a universal login. And again, one of the things you'd be trading, you know, in terms of getting, you know, we've got to think about the consumer here. What does the consumer want? If the consumer can trade premium content for data that's been used fairly and clearly communicated, I think you get a surprisingly good uptake. And once they have that right that the user has provided them, you can then monetize that across the wider ecosystem.
Yeah,
and you then get into arguments about who then created the value and how do you share it?
Yeah,
which is where the ego comes in and things get more complicated.
And obviously they can't do it alone.
They can't do it alone.
Yeah.
So what I suggest here is I like that idea, because the Portuguese publishers started doing that. The French which we'll be discussing at ATS Paris in April. Make sure you get your ticket. Is it May, April or May?
April 3rd,
and get your ticket today. We'll be discussing that. There's a bunch of publishers talking to you. In Germany, they're doing the same thing. In the UK, I believe this is where Ozone can have value as well, right? So I would say to that point, Rob, is like all those publishers should take a stake in Ozone, right? And let it become that data layer, right? And why not float Ozone, right, as a public company, so that at least all those companies are making revenue off the back of it, right? If Ozone became the data layer and was able to sell that inventory off site, right? Let's just say you're in the Guardian. I want to use that data to sell inventory on my site. But Ozone started taking that, as you say, off site and became a massive ad network, so all of them could share that off the back of it.
Indeed, and it could also become kind of, this is probably too much of a utopia, but it became a great place for promising entrepreneurial companies to get involved and add value to the mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, could someone like ID5 come in and help them with the use of data and the integration of IDs in that fair way? Could different ad tech companies come in and provide those great user experiences that people are going to actually want to get involved with?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that if the publishers right now who have strong brand loyalty, and let's be honest here, a lot of us are spending time on certain newspapers, right? Because the FT, the Guardian, or the Telegraph, or the Times, or the Sun, whatever you're into, like football for the Sun, there is brand loyalty there, right? If they can get ahead of this and news. And the Guardian and the Telegraph said, look, if we come together and build this universal login, we'll not only increase the yield on our own inventory, Ozone could go out and literally make us a ton of money off-site on the network. Like, Ozone could be the biggest premium ad network in the UK. It could be literally making billions.
You love an ad network.
Yeah, why not? So Ozone basically could be the data layer, right, for the universal login. It helps the publishers make more money on their own site. So as you say, if I know this site, these users on The Guardian, right, and he's logged into, or she's logged into all these different sites, I can serve an ad from an advertiser at a higher level, programmatically or whatever way it is. If they go off-site, Ozone then works with its broader network to say, we'll make you X amount of money.
But you don't want to turn it into an ad network because it instantly loses premium credibility.
AdSense... AdX is an ad network.
And of course it is.
It's a multi-billion pound ad network.
So I'd say we were talking about an ad platform, network. But it's
not class as premium. Everywhere.
So look, if I know that this is a Telegraph reader outside the Telegraph, right? Ozone could make me money. I actually believe that they're sitting on a gold mine here if they can get it right. And you know who's going to suffer? The duopoly will suffer. The money will come from the duopoly. And that will be a win-win for UK publishers and German publishers and French publishers and Portuguese publishers. I think every country should have a universal login for the best publishers in the market.
It's also a thing that regulators could get behind, right?
Because 100%. 100%. And you know what, Rob? The publishers would do it the right way. They wouldn't do it the Facebook way. They would do it with the user mind because they know that any slip-up, they would be, you know, crucified, basically.
Yeah, and you could then, if regulators want to create more competition in the market, yeah, and I think it is bad from the market when the big three companies own 60% of it.
And they're not paying tax here. So let's put this out, right? All American companies pay no tax. They are adding zero value, I mean, to the country's exchequer. Don't give me, for the broader economy, you could argue that Facebook, Google are good for the broader economy, particularly brands, smaller brands. But for the exchequer? Where is the big payday for the British exchequer or the Irish exchequer or the French exchequer from these companies? It's not happening.
I think you being off Twitter is making you more vociferous than normal.
Really?
Yeah, he had to turn your volume down because you were shouting so loud.
I don't think so. I think I'm very calm. I'm just passionate.
Oh yeah, very calm. Absolutely.
I'm very passionate about this subject.
Trigger point is ad networks and tax, right?
Exactly. Ad networks are a great you know.
Of course they are. And on that note, I'm going to move us on, talking of publicly voted companies, ad networks and collaboration between the industry. So Sky broke a story recently that Taptica, the company that bought Tremor Video DSP, are merging with Rhythm One. Taptica have come out and said, whoa, we're chatting to them, but we haven't actually done a thing yet. Hold your horses. But they are chatting to them. They are a target company they're looking at. It would be a $260 million merger. And the point of the story was that they would become a credible rival to YouTube.
YouTube or YouTube, really?
YouTube.
Okay.
Right. I mean, I don't know Zaptica so well, but I mean, you know, I've worked a bit with Rhythm One. With Yumi, I think, was what they bought as a video network, and it's a, you know, it's a credible player, but I think it's even combined still surely dwarfed by the power of Facebook.
Well, absolutely. And this, the interesting thing for me is that the story actually says, you know, a Google rival, a YouTube rival. Well, actually, in a video perspective, is YouTube the relevant party here anymore? Actually, is Facebook a more relevant party that should be people should be trying to pit themselves against?
But yeah. But is Rhythm One and Taptica together essentially going to be an ad tech platform which aggregates video supply so that buyers can buy it? Is that
yes, I would assume. Then there's no real information, but given what they both do now, I would assume that would make sense. They are both listed on the AIM, the London Stock Exchange.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, it is hilarious because it's actually being referred to as a kind of a US merger.
Yeah, which they're all, which seems to be a favoured place for the Israeli companies to to float.
Yes.
Ironically,
there are a lot. Actually, I've had a chat with the guy from the LSE who said that Israel is a place that he travels to most because there's so many interesting companies that want to come and invest in London.
Yeah.
I mean, I think to merge this point with what we were talking about last time with how we can help publishers, wouldn't it be great if all of the publishers used a non-Google or Facebook video network and that was consolidated?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the thing. This is the kind of, there's an argument here around collaboration, around kind of getting yourself out of the kind of the Google and Facebook bucket.
Because right now it's so easy to think, right, there's a whole load of demand there in that world. So yeah, you go and put your video ads going through DFP and in the Google world, and off you go. Mm. What we really need, I think, is for a great old competitor to come through. It'd be great if this could be it, or somebody else can do it to sort of act as a beacon for everyone to kind of go to and go, right, great content goes here, and it isn't all about, you know, the big three.
Yeah.
And I suppose the companies probably most challenging that in their own way, actually, right now, would be people like Teeds or Unruly, who have their own kind of growing video systems.
Yeah. But, absolutely.
But, you know, you can argue that both companies are very still reliant on IOs as opposed to, like, the programmatic platforms. I mean, if I look at Rhythm One and Taptica, you can argue that it's probably, you know, an app nexus play, or it's a, you know, that... That video TV space is becoming interesting because the broadcast, like, if we look at RTL buying SpotX and trying to build their own tech, so to Rob's point, not having Google as the gatekeeper. And one of the things I've learned from Google is that they are struggling in the broadcast space. They're struggling to get actual broadcasters to trust them because they're all worried about what happened.
Broadcasters are very protective of their ecosystem, and the don't want the likes of Google to come in and ruin it, basically.
I think that having a premium platform for premium video would be really interesting, and the demand is there, right? There is no video inventory out there. I mean, if you're buying a video inventory at £5 CPM, you're buying fraud, people, I'm telling you, because it ain't there, it ain't real. You know, so here, look, Taptica have a strong foothold in the gaming space. That is a big source of potential video, particularly reward video. And as we know from our own publication, TGE, there is a big need for that because obviously the number of people actually doing in-app purchases is starting to decrease or decelerate more than decrease. So there's a need for that. So, you know, I think it's a good thing. But then again, as we know from Oath, it's very hard to integrate different platforms, different technologies, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. That the integration play would be interesting.
I would imagine they actually won't integrate. They'll just take one platform and put all the demand and supply through it.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, Rob. I think you're spot on there. But it is interesting that there is a kind of an ad tech merger though in the LSE. It's kind of a novelty, really. And I suppose that's why the FT was all over it. You know,
but maybe. Maybe, yeah. On that note, let's close off for the news this week. We've had more than enough chat about that. And Rob, over to you, and to find out what on earth it is you're up to at the moment.
Well, right, yeah. So thank you. So what I'm really trying to do is, you know, work directly with brands to help them take more control of their marketing. And I think historically, a lot of brands used agencies for things like your measurement platform, your ad server, and also sort of the more details around programmatic planning and buying. But I think now that because of the speed to market that you have to be a successful brand, it's really important that the brands want to take more control. But they need help. So really what I'm doing is going out there and trying to have a chat with brands, talking to them about how they can take more control. Do you want to take your ad serving in-house? Do you want to get your own DSP seat? You know, that will guarantee you the transparency that a lot of you will really look forward to. Do you want paid search in many cases is going in-house and has been for many years. Paid social is already largely in-house at many companies. And then the next kind of battleground is display and then video going in-house. So I'm a really big believer that, first of all, it's not a new thing. It's back in 2004, I worked at Kelku, who did all of their media buying in-house. I think Andy Moylop back in 2010, where was he then?
Money Supermarket.
Oh, yes, he was Money Supermarket,
Golden Child.
Yeah, and so these things have been actually going on for years. But what's probably changed now is sort of more traditional brands are starting to consider it and look to think about how they can do it because they need to speed up their marketing process. Marketing hasn't changed over the last 20 years that much, but actually what it's done is got a lot faster. And therefore, you can't wait for an agency in one room with a different team in another room or a different building to come together. You have to be able to react that much faster, which is where this all comes together.
So how are they trying to tool themselves up internally, the brands you're working with? Because obviously, one of the challenges they do face when it comes to trying to bring things in-house is the silos that already exist.
Mm-hmm. So I think trying to build more modern teams, training is hugely important. How can we train people about how to understand, search, display, and social together? Because they all really are programmatic. All of them involve entering criteria into a platform and then procuring media. And how do they have the expertise internally to also work on measurement? If I could help solve one thing, it would be to kind of get the industry to move beyond last click. And if I can move the needle there, I'd be very proud. So I think it's partly about ownership, owning your contracts. It's partly about expertise and training, and also about ambition. One other thing that's happening right now is you've got a lot of people who have spent a long time working at agencies who've now reached their late 30s and 40s and want to go and have a different sort of life, want to work client side.
Mm.
Less centre of London media lunches and much, much more working out in the suburbs. And taking control of a brand. And I think that trend is hugely important to what's going on. And it will also really change how the market works because historically, all decisions have been made within a few square miles of central London. Now, if you want to go and launch new technology or a new piece of media, you've actually got to get out there and get on the road and meet the brands.
Interesting. Yep. So the brands themselves taking this in-house, it's very much like when you read the trades, you think it's a cut and dry thing, or we're taking everything in house, but it's quite convoluted. It's particularly in Europe because there's different teams. I would apply this to APAC, so different teams, different countries, different strategies. But your company and sort of the rise of these new next generation consultancies, I would call them, your evolved model is kind of working with the brands around different things. So some might want it in-house, some might still want to work with agencies, some might want to have a relationship with the tech vendor, etc.
Exactly, and it's been said before, but it's not a binary decision, and it's a journey that you go on. So I think normally what you would try and do is understand measurement first, because if you don't understand measurement internally, how can you execute?
Yeah.
From there, I think owning your own technology is really important because that gives you all of the control and knowledge that you need to move forward.
As in owning technology, you don't mean building it?
Not really, no. I'm talking about making sure that your ad server is in your contract
name. It's actually your contract, DSP, not the agency contract. Yeah,
exactly that,
yeah,
because then you have complete rights over everything that goes on in there. You've had crazy situations in the past where clients have asked agencies for logins to their platforms and they've been told no.
Yeah, I've experienced that.
What?
That's pretty common. It used to be very common.
I heard one agency say that they couldn't hand over the logins because of GDPR, which was, I didn't really understand.
That's amazing.
Well, they wanted a user consent. Who's the consenting user there? The agency. You can't have my consent.
Basically.
And then channel by channel, right? So, as I said, paid search is often the one that goes in-house first, paid social often second. Programmatic display is harder because there's many, many more publishers. And there's many, many more kind of wrinkles that you've got to iron out within display. One of the reasons why it's harder to buy premium publishers' inventory is because you have to go through that route. And then video and kind of more of the brand-led stuff will probably happen last if at all. This doesn't mean nothing will be outsourced. It doesn't mean agencies won't be used. You know, there's still nothing like an international agency. If you want to go and run 50 markets with good quality across a range of channels, there's nothing like a good international media agency. But the direction of channel is much more taking responsibility to control yourself, because it's so crucial now to performance, not only over a period of time, but also over a period of days. You know, you need to move that much faster.
And what do you think? Obviously, you work, we're not just talking about programmatic here, we're talking about search, we're talking about social, and you're talking about everything else. It's not just about moving a channel in-house. It's about changing a completely different, this is digital transformation, really, isn't it?
Yes, exactly, it is. It's about, you know, taking responsibility as yourself, your company, for your performance of your digital marketing, which is a huge tonal shift. You know, agencies will still be involved in the mix, but I think they'll be dictated to rather than dictating a lot more.
So will you see, we talk about in-housing, and I think the term in-housing is often missed. It's often not completely understood, because people believe in-housing to be bringing absolutely everything in-house. Actually, we're starting to see a lot more in-housing hybrid roles, where the strategy will be through taking in-house, the technology ownership in-house, but actually the execution is still sourced out to a third party.
Absolutely. And it could be many, it could be several third parties.
Yep.
Or it could be half third party, half in-house, you know, channel by channel. I mean, one thing I would say is, for me, almost all digital media is programmatic now. Paid search is definitely programmatic, and paid social for
me. Well, programmatic is automated media buying, so yes, exactly.
So, yeah, you know, the only things that's left over are individual spot buyers and IOs, which are, you know, pretty thin on the ground these days. And I think we're going to see a new breed of planner come through. You know, a new breed of planner who can actually understand these systems, understand, you know, the AIs that are being used. And when we talk about AI, we're talking about pretty simple AIs that optimise.
Of course.
You know,
standard campaign optimisation, machine learning algorithms. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
That. We're not talking about sort of intelligent computers that you can go and talk to and discuss your media plan quite yet. It's much more simple AI that does a job of improving your CPA or your ROI. But the guys that are coming through, the teams that are coming through, can handle that and also handle the creative alongside. Rather than having a paid search team, a paid social team, a display team, a creative team, and a strategy team, who, if you're lucky, talk together well.
Do you see that at the agency level or at the client level? Because the way you're talking about the client level now is that traditionally the agency is very siloed, isn't it? Like you've got, and maybe that's because the agency could charge the client more money, right? You could argue that is, but I'd say that's the only reason. But
also legacy reasons, right?
Yeah.
Offline, online, how that converges.
Of course.
TV, video.
But the client now wants to bring all that together because they want to have an omni-channel approach, right? They want to see how search affects social affects programmatic, how the whole, and build proper attribution around that, right? Is that what you're seeing from your clients? Like going, look, we have an opportunity to rebuild this whole thing here and still have the agency involved, obviously, because as you say, the agency is great for doing trading deals across Europe. It makes it easy to buy media, TV, radio, etc. But the brands are saying, look, hold on, we want to bring some of this in-house, we want to build our own attribution, we want to have a proper visibility of what we're doing.
That's right. I think it's a frustration that agencies haven't integrated better. This is a very broad statement. Some have and some haven't. But even today, if you ask clients and you say, right, what does your agency team do? Many of them will talk about how they're in different pockets in different buildings. Yeah, and do they even get to meet their programmatic display manager, or are they still at a trading desk?
Yeah, yeah. So quickly, just talk about the landscape, the consultancy landscape, because over the last sort of 12 to 24 months, we've seen some really interesting independents pop up, and obviously there's the ongoing battle between the holding groups and the big consultancy players like Accenture and IBM and McKinsey and others. So just let's talk about the big guys first before we talk about the independent layer. But the big guys first, what's really going on there in terms of sort of that competition? Because obviously the consultancies like to think we're not holding group, we're not thinking like the holding groups, and the holding groups are going, we're not thinking like consultancy. And I'm going, right, you're fighting over the same client. What really is going on at that top level? Because you were pointing out earlier on that some of the consultancies are acting more like holding groups at the minute rather than...
Did I say that, Kieran?
Yeah. You may have alluded to that, Rob, yes.
Okay, yes I did, yes. first of all, it's hard to say, right? Because everyone's trying to keep it a bit opaque as to what's really going on. But from a lot of behaviour we see, I think a lot of those consultancies are actually behaving exactly like the holding groups do.
In what way?
in that they are trying to run media for them and not really break down the silos and think of a new way of planning and operating, but actually kind of carry on the old model where they take responsibility for the media and execute.
Add fuel to the fire, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually quite quite disappointing. What I really think is that, you know, media is an evolving piece, and the old agencies have been there for a long, long time, and a lot of the problems they've got are legacy issues of structure. The structure of media was very different 10 years ago to what it is now, and it takes time to build that right. It's strange then the consultancies aren't kind of building from a new platform from the ground up that looks very, very different. And hopefully I'll be proven wrong on that, but at the moment I suppose it's actually good for my business, I guess, at the moment there's that opportunity because there are very binary choices. I mean, the big agency groups, sorry, the big consultancies right now seem to be very heavily recommending the big, yeah, the top three or four platforms. Tech companies.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, really, because that kind of kills the innovation that definitely exists in the layer below that. And I would have thought a better way of doing it would be to sort of, yes, let's respect the big companies, but let's also think about how we can really use the innovation and the power of the next level down to kind of drive through better marketing.
And do you think that strategy would come a cropper because like, you know, why would I pay that consultancy $300,000 or $400,000 for a project when all they're going to do is give me five choices, but at the end of the day say you got to pick Google because they're the best ones, and make a more of a compelling argument for Google as opposed, because Google is obviously in cahoots with that particular consultancy and probably kicking back money to them as well.
Good question. So the answer is I hope so. I mean, I think it's going to be an evolving space, and we'll see over time how it works. And I think, you know, brands will vote with their feet. If they don't feel they're getting the right level of performance for it, they're not going to pay the fees. And yeah, with a rapidly changing world, we're going to see an awful lot of opportunity. And I think there's never been a better time to be a small, nimble consultancy to try and get that work done.
So that brings us then to the independent layer, because we've seen some interesting ones, like some like yourself, a few others that are very data heavy, like is it Silver Bullet?
SBDS.
Who focus on data and data integration and sort of that niche, which is a very good niche to be. But in terms of like those players, where do you see that evolving? And do you see some good mid-sized companies being built out there?
Yes, I mean, there's a huge number of mid-sized companies, I think, doing, you know, some really amazing work. And you know, I think years ago, the industry would have shut these companies down.
Yeah.
You know, the more established players would have really kind of fought back against them getting a foothold. But I think it's been the opportunities available and openness from brands to engage with these companies has created a really exciting time for the industry where, you know, David maybe can beat Goliath and change things for the better. You know, certainly speaking for myself, been doing this now for 7 months, you know, having a huge amount of fun in what I'm doing. But when I chat to the other players in the market, they're also having a huge amount of fun and doing some really great work. And, you know, I really believe that these companies can all help each other out rather than trying to compete amongst ourselves to grow the opportunity rather than fight over the scraps that are there.
I think
beautiful.
But I think he's right.
Yeah.
I think the fact is, it's just not just the brands are open. It's just the ecosystem's exploded, right? You've got, you know, the platforms. You know, you got the rise of Amazon, rise of Alibaba. There are specialist agencies now. I just had breakfast the other day with a gentleman just left Amazon to start his own Amazon sort of special.
That'd be Ross, would it?
Ross. He's focusing on the Amazon optimization piece, but not just the ads, but also the end result. And there's real value in that, like, because, you know, brands are going, right, the holding groups don't have... We've had a few of them in here, but it's one or two people. And they're kind of like, the way they're positioned is if they're a massive expertise, but really they don't. And a lot of the holding group operations is based around the ads on these platforms as opposed to the end product, right? And so this is where I think there's a real gap in the market. There's going to be a bunch of independent players who specialize in these things. And the market's so big. I mean, Amazon is huge. There's millions and millions of customers on Amazon, millions and millions of companies selling. And they need help, you know, they need help to optimize. And I think that's what's created the open-mindedness, I think, around what you're doing. Because the proliferation of platforms, the proliferation of data-driven buying, selling, and media buying, you know.
And I think all of these companies have their own different flavor. Some focus more or less on different channels, more or less on, you know, service or execution or different forms of expertise, data. And that level of choice and skill set is can only be good for the brands to kind of get a real choice. You know, probably for the first time, they've actually got a real choice on how they want to go and push forward and execute their media and how they can and drive forward success.
So what's your sweet spot then? What's your focus then, Rob?
What's my focus? I really want to start with measurement and technology is really kind of the core. You want to go and get that right, and then driving through excellent results. So we're doing a lot of work with in the e-commerce space. We're doing a bit of work in travel. These companies that have regular sales coming through, heavy optimization, and want to drive forward a better experience for the consumer as well.
Brilliant. On that note, I think it's best to leave it there. We're out of time, but I want to say thank you very much to our special guest, Rob Webster.
Thank you.
And Kieran, of course, thank you to you.
Thank you, Lindsay.
And your vociferousness.
I don't think I was vociferous.
No, you weren't.
I'm very calm.
You're passionate.
I just care.
It's passion. It's passion.
I'm going to have a little cry now.
No. I didn't mean to upset
you. No, not you. I'm so passionate I have to cry. It's full of emotion.
Anyway, on that note, thank you, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.